Do you ever miss New Hampshire?
Yeah. I miss the mountains. I miss the green. Summer's coming to a close and I haven't hiked a mountain. You know, that's kind of sad.
This is Jess O'Hare talking to our producer, Justine Paradise, about why, after 9 years in Concord, New Hampshire, she decided to leave.
Well, how old were you when you first moved to New Hampshire?
I was young. I graduated from college and I moved to New Hampshire for a job. I got placed in New Hampshire with this environmental organizing group, and then that became my adventure. I mean, life in New Hampshire was mountain biking, swimming, skiing, sometimes even before work, you know, you just get it all in. And it was easy to do that. It's an affordable state. It was a great tight-knit community. It was easy to meet people and build a network very quickly. I got a hug from the governor once. You know, that just doesn't happen in other places. And I was single. I mean, I had a wonderful network of friends. I loved, you know, my job, but you know, the one of the things that was missing was it was really challenging to find single people my age.
Have you ever been on a date at True Brew?
Oh boy. This is Word of Mouth from NHPR. I'm Ben Henry. I'm here with Justine Paradise.
Hello, hello.
We are NHPR's resident millennial singles. And this hour, we're hearing stories about dating in New Hampshire.
Great. Should we get some drinks?
I know you don't as much. I use Tinder all the time. Not, I would say, because I like it. I just do.
How do you know I don't use Tinder?
We've talked about this, and you use, like, really artsy dating sites.
All right, well, let's start with what might be the only question that matters. Is New Hampshire a bad place for people in their 20s and 30s to date?
You know, it's a whole new world with dating apps, and things are much more transparent than they would have been before.
That's Jess O'Hare again. She lived and worked in Concord, New Hampshire for almost 10 years during her 20s.
If you are familiar with the dating apps, you swipe through people, yes or no, and you can cycle through pretty quickly in New Hampshire. So you'll start seeing the same people pop up again, people that you know, and that happens everywhere. But specifically in New Hampshire, it was noticeable how your kind of pool was really reduced. And I found myself like swiping and talking with people in, like, Kittery, Maine, which is, you know, like, an hour away.
So it sounds like Jess's experience on dating apps gave her this, you know, kind of unnerving insight into who is actually out there. But when she refers to this idea of a pool, this is really interesting to me because it feels like it's kind of a hard concept to define.
Yeah, exactly. And the pool, it's individual. It'll be different for everybody, and it depends on, like, sexuality, how far you're willing to travel, how, if you're looking for someone who's as educated as you, if you're interested in starting a family, and then, you know, cosmetic things like height, age, and weight. It's just different for everyone.
Yeah, I feel like we all think about this, and you always kind of wonder, like, who is actually out there, and, like, is there a way to know that? So let's just take Jess, for example.
Yeah, what's her pool?
Yeah, so she's in her early 30s, looking for someone around the same age. In New Hampshire, so if you look at just, like, demographic data, unmarried people in their 20s and early 30s make up about 15% of the population. So that's her pool, but compare that to someplace like New York City, for example. That same group makes up about 22% of the population. So that's a substantially larger pool by proportion.
Yeah, and by volume, when you look at that, that's in Merrimack County, there are 10,000 unmarried men of that same age. And in Brooklyn alone, where Jess moved, there are 240,000.
So by all measures, smaller dating pool for Jess in New Hampshire.
Yeah, and that's according to the American Community Survey estimates for 2012 to 2016.
That's what I hear, yeah.
But do we really need census data to tell us this? We sort of know this by gut instinct.
Yeah, I think you get this vibe. kind of walking down the street, you know, in Concord or Lebanon or wherever in New Hampshire, and feeling this is not like a place where there are a lot of young people. And that to me is hard to quantify. And I'm not even convinced that it's something that we can actually measure in demographic data.
Totally. Looking in the census for singleness or eligibility is really tricky, because just because someone's unmarried doesn't mean they're available or even looking for a partner.
Yeah. And there's this whole genre of clickbait articles online ranking sort of like the best U.S. cities to be single in. And I think the only thing that should be said about all of these lists is that they all have different cities on them. Like, nobody actually knows where the best place in the country to date is, because if you go to New York, you'll find you trip over people in New York who are just terrifically lonely. So, you know, what are you going to do?
Right. The point is that the lived experience might look and feel really different from what the data suggests. And for Jess O'Hare, that means when she was swiping through Bumble in southern New Hampshire, there were times when she felt a really keen sense of scarcity.
I started calling dating a numbers game. I was like, you just have to go on a number of dates to find someone compatible. And that's true anywhere. But,
yeah,
you know, I think there's just kind of this behind the scenes, maybe latent anxiety that comes with feeling like there aren't that many single people around you. You know, and you might try someone on for size that isn't really right for you, but like, they're single and available, so, you know, you go with it. And I don't mean to say that there weren't compatible people for me in New Hampshire. Of course there are. There's people everywhere. But again, it's that feeling that, you know, but what if I just never bump into them? Or like, what if they're just, you know, already in a relationship? It just felt the anxiety of scarcity was real. I would sit around with my friends, and like during the holidays, we would just notice like the rush of all of these people come back, and dating apps were all of a sudden like supremely populated. And so we would kind of mourn the fact that like all of these single people would then leave. I mean, it was noticeable. So that was just one thing. I was like, I mean, am I doing the wrong thing by staying here? And am I going to meet somebody that's compatible with me? It's kind of, I think it was a constant conversation that we were having.
How else did you come to this decision to move?
So I guess I will start to say that I love my friends very dearly. Many of my friends had started their families, and I am so, so happy for them. But it was kind of I had a funny reaction. I felt very alienated suddenly. They were entering the stage of life that I had no experience in, and felt kind of left behind. And it made it very clear that I was not in that same place. It made me feel even lonelier, you know, having them with their families. So I realized it's like, you know, if that's something that I want, if I want to start a family, if I want to meet people, I better make some changes. So that's why I decided to move to New York. I hate to admit that. I mean, I'm supposed to be a modern woman that, you know, is out like surging forward in her career. And this is, but, and of course there were professional reasons to move. Anecdotally, I had one friend who thought I was crazy for moving just because of dating. And I kind of responded to him to say, like, but it's really important.
Yeah, so you moved to New York. What's the scene like?
It's so, like, it's funny because I haven't even opened the dating apps all that much. I feel like I'm on the other side of it, where I'm almost afraid to do it because there's just so much. I don't know. It's a strange new world. And I haven't been doing a ton of it. My job has actually kept me really busy, and I'm enjoying doing that and facing that challenge. So I haven't had a lot of time. Yeah, in the fall, I guess, will be my high time to try out the dating scene here.
That was Justine Paradise speaking with Jess O'Hare. For those single people left behind in New Hampshire, this is not an uplifting tale. Are things really that bleak?
I love New Hampshire, and I've been in the dating business in New Hampshire for 31 years, and I think it's a great place to find love.
Janice Lewis would believe in the possibility of finding love because she's a matchmaker.
I mean, there's more happening in the major metropolitan areas, absolutely. But if you like New Hampshire and you want to live here, I do think it's possible to find love. I mean, it's if you think you're not going to find love, you're not going to find love. If you move to New Hampshire and say, I'm going to go out there and meet my, you know, the person of my dreams in New Hampshire, and you leave no stone unturned, I think you will. I think it's all about putting yourself out there, no matter where you are.
Janice is the vice president of Together Dating Service, or Together of New Hampshire. We talked in their office off the busy Londonderry Turnpike in Hooksett. Much of their office artwork has a floral motif, sometimes with an encouraging message. One placard hanging behind Janice's desk read, "Together is a wonderful place."
We're not an online dating service. We are kind of what you would call an old-fashioned matchmaker. Everybody comes in here and I interview everybody that we match up. And then once they go out on a date, they tell us how it went. And that's really fun to hear about the date. Sometimes I think it's going to be like a home run and it's not. And other times I'm just like, oh, maybe. And it's a home run.
And then I sort of can't believe I asked her this, but I wanted to know, did Janice believe in soulmates? And maybe that's too easy, but if you have a philosophy kind of that drives you behind finding love for people.
Well, I believe that there's a lid for every pot, that there is a soulmate for every person, but they have to be proactive in finding. You know, it's not always like the movies where you bump into somebody on, you know, the side of the street and it's love at first sight. I mean, I guess that does happen for some people, but for others of us, it's a little bit more difficult finding that soulmate.
Together of New Hampshire mostly serves the 45-plus crowd. Janice thinks that's because these days people in their 20s and 30s rely on apps. But there was a time when they did have younger clients.
I remember a girl coming in because she was like 28, and Fred likes clocks, so the office is always loaded with clocks. And she says, is this a sign because my biological clock is ticking? And I said, oh, aren't you funny? No, Fred just likes collects clocks.
Fred is Fred Sullivan Jr. He's the president of Together of New Hampshire, and when he started the branch almost 40 years ago, the company operated all over the country. But now, the New Hampshire outfit is the only one left.
Do you work with LGBTQ? Do you work with queer people?
No, we do not. Which, again, New Hampshire's such a small market that it really wouldn't benefit us to go with another service, another entity other than the market that we're originally intended for.
I've definitely thought of it. And I would love to do that, but we're just, you know, at this stage of the game, we're not doing that. But there are definitely, I think, a lot of options out there for everybody.
Have you tried at all?
No, because we've just been doing it this way for so long that, you know, it's something that's crossed my mind, though. I won't say that I haven't seriously thought about it, just then I just get busy doing what I'm doing and working, you know, with the demographic that we have and has been what I'm accustomed to working with, that just haven't gotten into that. It's not to say that we wouldn't, though. I would love to do that.
As we wrap up and I get ready to leave the office, Janice asks me, are you single? She's a professional after all, so I tell her.
I am single, yeah.
We could pick you up.
Yeah.
Are you dating?
I am, yeah. I'm on the apps. Yeah.
How do you like Tinder and Bumble and but I, do you like it?
I don't think anyone likes it.
Yeah. But you're putting yourself out there. But if you want an alternative, you're young. How old? Do you mind?
No, it's fine. I'm 28.
Yeah, so you're very young, so I don't know that we don't have a lot of young men anymore, but I'll keep my eyes open if we...
Yeah, if you see someone who'd be good, maybe.
Yeah. You seem great. You'll definitely find someone. It's good that you're putting yourself out there.
most people do recognize that it is a harder reality, like for kind of rural Americans to online date, right?
Scarlett Wang is a PhD student at UC Berkeley studying sociology.
There are people who just like the lifestyle in, you know, rural America. They like the, you know, open skies and vast lands, and they would never move to the cities to find romance. And some are okay with just being single. Some are okay with just having, you know, these occasional flings every once in a while. And so, but, you know, for some people, that's not a possibility. So, like, you know, finding a partner, finding romance is such an integral part of, you know, who they are. But also, you know, living in urban areas doesn't, I mean, it's not just about the act of online dating, but also just the environment and the social kind of structure around it. Just like it's more supportive of, you know, kind of younger people, you know, finding romance. I guess just more of a vibrant restaurant and bar scene. And so basically, I think just like structurally, you know, urban areas are maybe built more for that kind of online dating friendly environment.
Scarlett's research broadly examines how online interactions influence offline relationships. That includes platforms like Airbnb, Couchsurfing, and of course, online dating apps.
Online dating is one of those things where even if you're not an active participant of it, you definitely are kind of impacted by its force, right? And, you know, obviously there are people who are very resistant towards it, people who wholeheartedly embrace it. With regards to rural areas, I think, especially for people that, you know, we call people who belong to this market called the thin market, so like queer people, older people, people who, you know, traditionally have had less opportunities meeting people at the bar or whatnot, in traditional offline settings, I think online dating has really opened up, you know, a ton of more opportunities for themselves. And so, yeah, so for, you know, queer rural Americans, I think online dating has been tremendously helpful. And also, I think it's just a way faster and more accessible way to meet new people rather than, you know, going to kind of offline settings. It's sort of just like having a bar in your cell phone, right? So even for a lot of kind of straight individuals, I think online dating has really kind of opened up the market for them.
Yeah, well, I want to talk a little bit more about being queer or just not being heteronormative even in a rural state. How is has online dating changed, if that's possible or not? Like how does online dating change that?
I think it sort of is like a safe space for queer people to explore their sexualities. You can think of it as, you know, sort of the metaphor that I use is like having a bar in your cell phone. So because, you know, in, you know, sort of rural parts of America, you don't really have a lot of gay bars or gay community events or whatnot. So online dating platforms are sort of this digital space where you can explore your sexuality, you can meet people, you can find people to hook up with, you can find people to have a romantic relationship with. And it's sort of a, I would call it a safe space for a lot of people. And I think that has opened up a lot of opportunities for people who may not have the resources, for example, to move to, you know, urban centers. So yeah, I think it's just given them an opportunity to meet more people, and it fills a gap that rural America like really needs.
I noticed that, and people have sort of said like it gets almost more regional. Like Jess described, she had friends who drove to Vermont, an hour away, or to Maine, also an hour away, and then also just like. Lowering your standards is probably the wrong way to put it, but maybe that's what it feels like, or that's how people would describe it right away. But just like broadening your definitions of what you think is right for you, or like, or what you're open to in terms of both distance and like type of person, like is sort of what a lot of people here are telling me that they're doing.
Right. So, but then I guess the inherent assumption there is that the person that you should get into a relationship is should always be someone that's close by, that it should be sort of convenient. Would you say that?
I mean, that would be ideal, right? Walking over right. to your person's right. house. But it's just the nature of it in this state, I guess.
Right. Yeah. I mean, traditionally, people have always dated, you know, people that live, you know, across the street and whatnot. And I guess the most, the primary mode of contact with, you know, new romantic partners is, you know, introductions through a friend or, you know, going to the neighborhood bar and whatnot. It is only with online dating that people are sort of, you know, really kind of venturing out and dating people across, you know, racial backgrounds, income, educational achievements. And I think that's a good thing. You know, I think you see a lot more diversity in relationships now because of online dating, because you're driving, say, an hour away to meet someone that is, you know, not within, you know, the usual scope of people that you hang out with. And that person may not be white. That person may not be whatever that you're used to. And I think instead of thinking it as, you know, lowering your standards or settling or whatnot, I mean, I think we need to understand that love isn't always convenient, right? It's not always easy. And it's whatever that makes it work for yourself. And if that entails driving an hour away to go on a date with someone, then you gotta do it, right? You sort of have to put yourself out there and put in effort before you get returns. And so it's really hard to sort of give, you know, one solid advice. But of course, there are good practices when you actually do online dating. And I think those can come in handy for a lot of people.
Ooh, so such as, what are the good practices, especially tailored for a rural environment?
So I would say, like, one of the biggest things that I've always sort of encouraged rural Americans to do is actually to relax the radius on their online dating profile, to really get a, you know, just like if you started with like 20 miles or whatever, just like try to relax it to the widest possible radius, right? So you get the biggest exposure to different people. And this is not unique to, you know, people not living in urban centers, but I think it's really good to relax your preferences too. And I don't think this is settling. I think this is just seeing what's out there, because you never know what, you know, may come your way that you thought you didn't like, but then you're sort of intrigued by it. And so you don't want to cut yourself out. You know, you want to leave yourself with those options when they arrive. And so when in doubt, swipe right. Because the thing is, we're so quick to sort of judge or like cancel someone, right? And I think a really, really, really kind way to do online dating is to be more accepting, to be more open-minded, and to say more yeses than nos.
So let's say you're on the apps, you've swiped right, and you finally managed to get yourself a date. That's on Word of Mouth after the break. Stay with us.
Welcome back to Word of Mouth. I'm Ben Henry. Have you ever seen two people out in public who are very obviously on a first date? You almost feel bad for them. The rest of us are enjoying this cafe patio on an overcast afternoon, but not these two. You want to know what they're saying to each other. What could be more embarrassing, more juicy gossip? They're sequestered on this island of courtship where the normal rules of social life don't quite apply. You might say, "I like your scarf." And they might say, "Thanks, it belonged to my mother." And then what? Do you ask about the mother who seems to be dead? That won't do. Not right out of the gates like this. If you ask me, first dates should be illegal. But without them, there would be no way, you know, to begin dating. So here we are. It bears asking then, what actually happens on a first date? How do you start? Where does it end? What are we doing here? Okay, let's say you've got yourself a first date. Nice. You've been too busy lately to date very much. You need to get out of the house. First dates are weird, but your friend set you up with this person. It's probably going to be fine. Prepare yourself. A stranger is about to ask you, who are you? Like, really, what kind of person are you? Are you creative? Are you empathetic? Are you aware of your own flaws? Do you have hobbies? Do you ever miss being a child? What makes a photograph beautiful? You obviously don't have good answers to any of these questions. You can't figure out if you're the kind of person who wears sandals or not. So what do you do on a date? Others will tell you to just be yourself, which is outrageous advice for a person lacking a firm grasp of who that self is. Just try to be someone. If you can manage it, be someone cool. Okay, when you show up for this date, the first thing to do is find them. This can be exhausting in a crowded coffee shop. Here's what's gonna happen. You'll see them, but they haven't seen you yet. Take a breath, make sure you're smiling, but not like a weird smile, normal smile. Actually, don't smile yet, just be ready to smile at the right time. Nobody walks around with a grin on their face. Okay, you're right behind them now, but they haven't noticed you. What next? Should you tap them on the shoulder? That's weird. It's like you're a child who got lost in a department store. Oh, it's too late. You already did it.
Hey.
You say hi, and they give you nothing. You definitely have the wrong person. Back to square one. Another deep breath, smile like a normal person. Gradually survey the room. You'll find them eventually.
Must be less.
It's time to open this date up. You can say something normal, like, nice to meet you, and then make a little joke to diffuse the tension. You might choose to say something bizarre, like, thanks for hanging out with me.
Hey, thanks for hanging out.
Yeah, no problem.
So you've been to this spot before?
This is my favorite cafe in Northern New Hampshire.
Cool. Okay, I'm excited.
First date conversations gravitate towards your job, which can be a truly boring thing to talk about. It's your responsibility to know whether you have a boring job. On the other hand, if you really do care about what you do, talk about it. People want to know what gets you out of bed in the morning. Like most aspects of a first date, it's a study in self-awareness. You're there to meet the other person, but you're fogging up the windows with your own anxiety so much that you can barely see them.
I work for REI as an instructor, and then I also work in the store as the visual lead, so I do like merchandising and displays and like hand lettering. Cool. I do carpentry as well.
Really?
Yeah.
By the way, brace yourself for small, awkward silences. They're coming.
And it was a terrible job, but it's been very useful skills ever since.
About 5 seconds into one of these, you'll begin to panic. You will start to review the thing you just said and wonder if you've bored your date into dumbfounded silence. Listen, what's been said has been said. That ship has sailed and then sank, so it's time to take a long drink of whatever's in front of you. A great way to recover here would be to say something funny. Put them at ease. It should be something smart, but also light. Now is not the time for stand-up comedy. Another tactic, if that doesn't work, is to talk about dating itself. You might find a lot of common ground in regards to what you're looking for.
I'm just gonna ask, do you go on a lot of first dates?
No, not really. I guess my way of, like, hanging out with guys is I will be like, oh,
like, do stuff.
Do you want to go rock climbing, or, like, do you want to go hiking, or, like, I don't know, do you, like, want to go for, like, a cycling tour or something like that? And so,
something to keep in mind, if you ask them a particularly probing question, get ready to have that question fired right back at you.
Do you go on a lot of first dates?
Sometimes. It depends. Yeah. Like, sometimes.
At this point, we should talk about your choice of location and activity. There are some elements of a first date that cushion you against failure. Stick to the 3 A's of dating. Alcohol, alcohol, alcohol. Meeting at a bar is flexible. You can run off to the bathroom if you need a moment. You can chit-chat with the bartender. Or you can just say that you have an early morning and call the whole thing off whenever you want. But hiking? Hiking is not a good first date. The further you go in, the longer it takes to get out. That is a Chinese finger trap of a date. Also, it's so early. You did not need to get up this early.
Okay. I brought a map.
Yes, great.
I think I know where we're going.
On the other hand, you've been on so many dates in bars. Dating has begun to feel like just one more form of consumption. A way of trying on new people as conveniently as you try on a jacket, then buy it, then return it the next day.
All right, should we get going?
I think we probably should. I don't know.
Cool. I'm probably gonna put this mic away so that we can just hike.
Maybe this will be good. Okay, so we met for coffee this morning.
We did.
And then we took a hike.
We did. We started at the base of North Twin, made it to South Twin.
That was like 8 a.m.?
Yep.
That we started at 8 a.m. Time was now like 3? I will say this is longer than my average first date.
Oh, I was thinking about that too, actually. I was like, oh, what if this is intimidating? Like, to spend that much time with someone, not at a movie.
You were worried about me being intimidated?
Yeah, so I was initially talking to Allie, and I was like, so what do you think he's up for? Like, how many miles, like, are we talking? Basically, her response was, well, what's the minimum amount of miles you would want your partner to be able to hike? And I said 10.
Oh, she was already kind of screening me.
You think so?
We did hike down a different way than we hiked up. Mm-hmm. Now we're going to the road. We're going to try to hitchhike a ride back to where we parked. Also not a first date thing, I will say.
No, it's not. This is a very abnormal first date. You also passed the spontaneity test. Like, as in...
Didn't know that test was being taken.
No.
I don't think you did.
I don't know. We had a plan for what we're going to do, but then I had kind of proposed that we take a different way down and you're all for it. So.
Do you feel like it's a good thing to know about somebody if, like, just like how spontaneous they are?
And I think it has to do a lot with, like, maybe how much control the other person needs. And I feel like I've been in some, like, really unfortunate, like, controlling relationships. You don't feel that way at all.
Great.
Yeah.
This is, I think, where we need to go left. This does not look like a road that we're going to get picked up on. I think we're walking.
No.
So do you not like just meeting up for coffee and then calling it quits after, say, 1 hour?
I can... I feel like I learned a lot more about you today, though, than I would have, like, over beer.
Yeah. Yeah, for sure. Hitchhiking is definitely third date territory.
You think...
In a normal...
You think third?
I mean, you mentioned you somewhat recently got out of, like, a pretty serious relationship. Do you remember, like, what was the first date that you went on after that?
I've had, like, maybe three. Is that a handful? Would you say three is a handful?
You can hold three in your hand, yeah.
Okay, so I've had a handful of, like, spicy, like, on the side things, and they never turned into anything.
Some rebounds.
Yeah, I guess so. Yeah. The one of them was, I'm sorry, James. Yes, you were a rebound.
Anyway. Just never really, like, took off.
No, and I don't know that I wanted it to.
But I guess that gets to the question of, like, what's the point of dating for you? Like, what, like, why do it?
One, it's just great to, like, get to know people, but also to find people that, you know, have similar experiences and, like, want similar things out of life.
But you're kind of describing friendships.
It's true.
And this is what I've been asking myself that I don't have a good answer for, which is, like, how is dating different than friendships other than sex? Like, what is, like, why does it feel different? And is it all just kind of a matter of context and the actual substance of the thing is just, like, a robust friendship?
A robust friendship. Well, I guess if you're in a committed relationship, you're probably consulting someone else on, like, big decisions, right?
In other words, like, there are boundaries you have to draw at some point with a friend. Like, they can only be, hang on, blackberries. Nothing like road blackberries. Ooh, they're kind of covered in, like, road dirt, but I'm kind of down. Oh, it's really good. I don't actually know if that's a blackberry.
Okay,
I don't
weird.
Know. It's, yeah, it tastes, like, slightly not like a blackberry.
We might die.
I don't know if there are any poisonous berries that look just like blackberries.
You think so?
Probably not. Who would do that?
Who would do that?
So, yeah, so there are, like, boundaries that you have to draw that, like, you're not going to let your friends into everything in your life. Like, it's just not really appropriate.
I had this exact conversation, actually, with someone maybe several days ago about how I don't want to be a burden, but specifically like to that person or really anyone around me. And they said, well, lists, sometimes people want burdens. And he didn't mean it in a way that was like people are looking to be heroes. He meant it in a way that like people care about you. Mm-hmm.
Hi there.
Hi.
How you guys doing?
Good. How are you?
Hey, we're just trying to get a ride up 3 miles down the road. Would that be okay? Do you think you could give us a ride?
Yeah, I have put a seat down.
Okay, that's fantastic. Thank you.
Thank you.
You should probably get on that side of the bigger seat.
Okay, great.
I'm Liz, by the way.
Wendy.
Nice to meet you, Wendy.
Hi, I'm Ben. I hope you don't mind. I have a microphone.
Oh, hi. I'm Liz.
Bruce.
Bruce, nice to meet you.
You too.
Hey, Bruce, I'm Ben.
How you doing, Ben?
Good to meet you.
You ready? 3 miles that way?
Probably closer to 5 miles, but okay. Liz and I were having a very interesting conversation that I want to continue. That those are like the milestones in a relationship that really matter, which is when like it's not like the good things that happen. It's like when you agree to help someone like through some kind of burden.
Yeah,
I agree. We've been dating for 15 years. Been engaged for 13.
You've been engaged for 13 years. When is the wedding schedule?
At our age, it's not really that important.
Yeah. We just get along good and everything else, so, yeah. You know, each paper ain't gonna change anything the way we are.
Yeah.
So, how long have you guys been dating?
We're not.
This is our first date.
So, as two people who have been dating for 15 years, any advice?
Just, you know, do what you guys like to do together. You guys like to hike and everything else, or do, you know what I mean? All kinds of different stuff, kayaking, whatever. Do it. We do everything. She used to go to car shows with me all the time. I was a mechanic for a long time. We just got along great. We still do.
Do you think dating got easier when you got older? Like, is it hard when you're young? Because it feels hard.
It is, in some ways.
When you first find out, it's hard.
There's a lot, as a younger person, that tears you different directions. And I think that makes it tough.
Do you feel like you had to compromise a lot in relationships?
As a woman, yeah, always. Yeah. Yeah. Because we're kind of raised that way, and I think. We're caretakers, and I'm guilty of it myself in the sense because I like being a caretaker. I like being the person that can take care of things and take care of people. But I think women kind of tend to lose themselves in relationships more so than men do. I used to be a huge hiker. I used to be a huge whitewater rafter, the whole nine yards. He's a city boy. He doesn't do that. So I don't hike as much anymore, you know, because and it's not just like I'm really making concessions, but I like to spend more time with him than I do hiking by myself, so that's just how it works. So yeah, I think everybody makes concessions. If anybody ever tells you relationships 50-50, they're full of crap. It's not. There's times when it's 70-30 and there's times when it's 90-10, you know. But what usually makes it work out, in my experience, is you just have to be willing to be there. That's it. It's if you're willing to stick it out and work at it, it'll work. If you're not, it won't. You know, it can be magical, but it's not a magical situation, you know.
This is the head. That's the rest area.
This one is it. Okay. Thanks, Bruce. Have a good one. That went great.
Yeah. I like that they are untraditional in the way that, like, they don't have to get married. Like, they can be engaged for 13 years if they want to, and they're just, like, both enjoying each other's company, and isn't that like the goal?
You know what I should have asked them that I didn't think to ask? I should have asked about their first date and how they met.
Oh God, yeah, you should have.
How do you think they met?
Wendy and Bruce?
I bet they like ran into each other at a supermarket.
You think so?
He like needed some advice for like a type of meat to put in some dish, and he was just grasping at straws and asking strangers for advice. That's how I think they met.
I think they met like she needed someone to work on her car. Didn't he say he was a mechanic? And then she brought her car into the shop, and then like this super sexy mechanic walks out with like grease on his hands and like the rag in his back pocket, and yeah,
one thing leads to another.
Yeah. Yep.
Okay. Well, let's drive home.
Oh,
like anything that could maybe, just maybe, change my life, a first date that actually goes well scares me. Especially afterwards, when I'm alone with myself again. In the middle of a date, my defensive machinery is up and running. Self-effacing humor, a selective retelling of my past, recording a date with a microphone and then griping about it on the radio. These are elaborate self-defenses. But I can't keep that defense up against myself. I liked spending time with Liz, which means I've got something to lose now. Even good relationships, at least in my experience, come to an end eventually. The last scene of the movie The Graduate is famous because it sits you down in this feeling. Dustin Hoffman has whisked Catherine Ross away from her own wedding. They collapse in the back of a bus. It's heading somewhere. They look at each other, then look ahead. And the movie should end here with elation on their faces, but it doesn't. The camera lingers, their faces relax, and then fall. And in between them hangs the question, what now? Simon and Garfunkel plays, you get the point. As far as I can tell, all of this does seem to be worth it. We keep getting on that bus.
That's it for Word of Mouth. This episode was produced this week by me, Justine Paradise.
And me, Ben Henry. Our staff includes Taylor Quimby, Jackie Helbert, Hannah McCarthy, Jimmy Gutierrez, and Nick Capodice. Our executive producer is Erica Janik.
Maureen McMurray is a really good icebreaker.
Big thanks this week to Liz Cianci for taking me on a date. Liz is a freelance photographer, and you can check out her work at efcianci.photography. That's efcianci.photography. And also thank you to Jimmy and Ali Gutierrez for setting us up. And of course to Bruce and Wendy for the ride. Thank you guys, saved us a lot of walking.
And thank you also to Dr. Jess Carbino of Bumble and Casey McDermott, NHPR's data and investigations reporter. If you're curious about where the single people actually are in northern New England, you're in luck because we made some maps on wordofmouthradio.org.
Look it up, folks. Music in this episode is by Jazzar, Blue Dot Sessions, Uncle BB, Scott Grattan, and Lobo Loco.
Word of Mouth is a production of New Hampshire Public Radio. Do 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 do